Okay, we're on Perek Yutes. Last time we got when Pasuk Yud, three lines in the end of the page. Okay, Vayemer Shemul Meisha. Story until now is Hashem is telling Meisha Rabbeinu that get ready for the receiving of the Torah. They're going to be receiving the Torah soon. The Jews are Mamlachas Kohenim Goy Kodesh, that's what we learned last week. The treasure of the Jews that they're this Mamlachas Kohenim Goy Kodesh, so therefore we learned every Jew is a Melech, every Jew is a Kohen, and therefore we learned that therefore the Kohenim and the kings can fulfill everybody their obligation. Okay, so then Moshe Rabbeinu comes and calls the elders and says, this is what Hashem wants you to do. In Pasuk Ches, it says, everybody said, we're going to do it. Moshe Rabbeinu returns the words back to Hashem, as we learned, that even though Hashem knew, obviously, what the Jews are going to answer, or what they did answer, Moshe Rabbeinu nevertheless went back and told Hashem. Okay, so, Ve'em Hashem al Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, now that the Jews are ready, basically, to accept the Torah, Lech al-Am, now go to the nation, V'kidashtem ayem u'machar, sanctify the people, and he's going to explain what this means. Prepare the people today and tomorrow. They have to wash their garments. Well, basically, when it speaks in the Torah about washing garments, it doesn't mean putting in a washing machine. It means basically immersing it in a mikvah for the sign of purity. The Jews are going to be doing certain things now in preparation for Matan Torah, which are actually acts of purification. We're going to learn that the Jews really went to the mikveh. The garments had to go to the mikveh. They had to sanctify themselves to get ready for the revelation of Hashem and Har Sinai. And you should be ready on the third day. Now Rashi explains, what does it mean, be ready on the third day? Ready on the third day means they cannot be with women. They have to be separated from the wives because they didn't want the people that went to the mikveh should become tummy again afterwards. So it had to be a concept of separating for 3 days. Now, basically, according to some Mefarshim, Hayei Nacheinim Layem Ashlishi does not only mean being separated from the women, it also means they shouldn't be doing work. They shouldn't do any business of the world. They should be preparing themselves in front of the elders to actually receive the Torah. So the preparation is a twofold preparation, both in laws of purity and impurity, and in the concept of spiritually preparing oneself for something of such a magnitude. Matan Torah, as we learned, and we're going to learn more about it, Matan Torah was the greatest revelation that the Jews ever had until the coming of Mashiach. The greatest revelation of godliness, greater than Kriyas Yamsuf, greater than the Beis HaMikdash, greater than Yetzias Mitzrayim, was Matan Torah. In order to be the vessel, to be able to receive the revelation of Matan Torah, there had to be the preparation of the Jew. We learned this, we're learning this in fact in the morning, Maimonim, before davening. In order to have a revelation from above, you need first to prepare yourselves down here. In a practical, simple sense, if you want and expect Hashem to give you a bracha of rain for a farmer, you have to prepare the field. If you don't prepare the field, you don't make a vessel for the bracha may pour from above. It might be an abundance of rain, but it's going to be worthless if you didn't make the keli. This revelation of Ayeret Hashem al Har Sinai, the Hashem coming down to Har Sinai at Matan Torah, in order for it to be an everlasting relationship, an everlasting revelation of Elokus and relationship with Hashem and the Jew, there had to be a preparation from the Jew side to be able to receive it. In fact, in the Maimon that we're learning in the morning, the Alter Rebbe explains that you have the same concept of, in order to have the revelation of Shabbos, the Kedush of Shabbos, you need to have first the 6 days of the week. Because the 6 days of the week are the Avodah of elevating the world, refining the world, dealing with the world, elevating oneself, that when the revelation of Shabbos comes, you're a vessel for it. So, Vayu Nuchenim Layem Ashlishi is also, as Mefarshim explained, in a literal sense, that they should actually prepare themselves by not working and doing anything of worldly nature. They should mamish sit and listen to the elders. Why? Ki b'yayim ha-shlishi on the third day, which Rashi explains, is the sixth day of Sivan. Yedid Hashem le'enei chol ha'am, Hashem will come down to the eyes of the entire nation, meaning, as Rashi quotes in the Medrash, that nobody will be blind. What does the Pasuk say? Hashem will reveal himself to the eyes of the entire nation. Now obviously if people are blind, Hashem can't be seen by them. It means everybody will be healed. All the deaf people will be able to hear. Because it says everybody will be able to see. L'ayni cholo'am al har Sinai, on the mountain of Sinai. Now basically we learned like this. One second. Rosh Chodesh, just to get the order straight over here. Rosh Chodesh Sivan, the Jews came to Midbar Sinai. Okay? Beis Sivan, Hashem said, Mamlechas Kehenim v'goy Kaddish, you are this holy nation. Then we have what's called Shleisha Simei Hagbala. The third, fourth, and the fifth. Well, this is a whole question over here. Either it's the fourth, fifth, and the sixth. That's the way Rashi learns. The fourth, fifth, and the sixth are the 3 days of preparing that on the third day, which is the sixth of Sivan, Hashem will come down in Har Sinai. So the 3 days began on the fourth, fifth, and sixth. Now, what did you want to ask? Not only that, it's more than that. It's, even if they went to the mikveh, they would... Okay, well, I don't want to get into it now. There would be spit out the zera, it would also make her tummy. Whatever. Hashem wanted there shouldn't be any tum at the time of Matan Torah. And then he says, you should fence off the nation, saviv lemer, around the mountain, saying, Hishamru lachem, that Hashem says to them, you have to be extremely careful, Aleis Bahar, from going up in the mountain. V'negeh b'katzeo, is even touching it. Now the Medrash says, how far away from Har Sinai do they have to be? So the Medrash says they have to be 2,000 cubits, which is approximately 3,000 feet. Because that's the boundary that we find in Torah many times. 2,000 amis, which is 3,000 feet. So, similar to Shabbat, but there's a concept of 2,000 amis. So Hashem says, you have to separate from the mountain this whole amount of time. And it says, whoever will touch the mountain, Meis will die. In other words, it's liable with a death penalty. So Hashem says it was serious business. Leisiga bayod, you're not allowed to have any person, Hashem said, you're not allowed to have any person touching it. Yisakel, because whoever touches it will be stoned, or yada yada will be thrown down. In behema imish, whether it's an animal or a person, lo yichya, they will not live. Bimsheicha yevel, when the extended blast of the shofar, meaning when the long blast of the shofar is completed, heima yalivar, then you can go back up to the mountain. So you see an interesting halacha here, that even the animals were warned not to touch the mountain, and if the animals would touch the mountain, they would also be killed. Which is a very interesting concept, because normally, freedom of choice is only by people. In Parshas Mishpatim, there is a din, later on a Chumash will learn, that if an animal kills a person, you kill the animal. So it says, not as a punishment because the animal did an Aveda, because an animal doesn't have free choice of choosing good and bad. So it says over there, from Rashi quotes in the Gemara, that why does the animal, like Rashi, what did the animal do? You know, it didn't do anything choosing to do wrong. The fact that something bad happened through the animal, it shows the animal doesn't deserve to be. But here, there is a concept of schar and einish for the animal. Hashem says to the animals, don't touch the mountain. And the animal, which basically means, if you just take it in the simple context, Hashem is commanding the people to watch their animals. Because a person, as we know, if your property damages somebody, you have to pay. If your animal gores, if your ox kills somebody, or not even kills, if your ox kills another animal, the owner has to pay. So the question is, why does the owner have to pay? He didn't do it. He didn't kill the animal. The ox killed the animal. So, you know, go to the ox. The answer is, you own property. You have a responsibility to make sure that your property doesn't go damaged. So the simple meaning over here is that the people had a responsibility to make sure their animals didn't touch. If your animal touched, you're going to lose the property. It's going to get killed.
Rabbi, watch with this mom.
Mount Sinai, it's called.
Oh.
You ever hear of it?
I've heard of it. Yeah. The hospital also.
But it's not a hospital.
You can't climb it, you can't do this.
When God came down on Har Sinai,
Hashem
said the place is too holy for people to come close to.
I see. Okay, thank you.
But what's interesting, what we learned many times, what's very unique and interesting, that as soon as God left the mountain retained no holiness whatsoever. Unlike the Beis HaMikdash, the temple, even though there's no temple today, but the place is holy, right? The place is holy. Even though Matan Torah was a greater revelation than the Beis HaMikdash, yet the second God left Mount Sinai, Har Sinai, there was no Kedusha at all left. And everybody, animals, people, I mean, there's no, that's it. There was nothing holy left.
What? If somebody touched his ear, the mountain would be stone or thrown down. Thrown down from where?
Well, normally, the Gemara says, I think Rashi says it too. You know, when the Torah says, there's four capital punishments in Torah. When Torah says he kills somebody, it could be done in one of four ways. Skila, Sreifa, Hereg, and Chenek. Which means stoning, burning,
right.
Killing with a sword, or choking. Mm-hmm. Now, when you hear about stoning, how do you picture stoning? A guy stands against the wall, and everybody takes shots.
Right.
That's not what happens. That's not what happened. No. Choking doesn't mean that. That's not what they did. Burning didn't mean they threw you into a fire. I'll give you an example. Burning. You drank hot lead and you died instantaneously. If choking, they put you in quicksand up to your neck, then they tied a rope around you and two people pulled until you went. Stoning was a completely different process. It was a two-story tower. They threw you off. And then when you died, they just put a stone on your head. Or, if you didn't die, then they would stone you. But it wasn't like a guy stood up against the one, he threw stones at the guy. So Rashi says, what's the Pasuk saying? You're going to be stoned or thrown down. It's either, you know. So the answer is, that's the way the person was stoned.
Did this ever happen?
It happened. The Gemara says, the Mishnah says, there's two opinions in the Mishnah, but one opinion says any Bezdin that killed somebody once in 7 years, another opinion says once in 70 years, was called a killing court. Bezdin rarely killed somebody because it would make the witnesses so crazy that they would rarely not contradict themselves. It was very difficult.
Were these all Jews that were killed?
Yeah.
Why?
Who should they kill? Goyim? Arabs? What do you want?
But why? What were they guilty of? Why were they
going? God said, "Don't go on the mountain," and they went. What do you mean?
That's why. So for that reason, they got killed.
If God says, "Don't go on the mountain," if you go, you get killed, and the guy goes, they don't deserve to die.
Aye.
What do you mean? Oy.
Nobody went.
Nobody went because the Jews were behaving. The person was, he wouldn't move. So it says, "M'sheich ha'yevel." Only when it was the long blast of the shofar went, that's when they were able to stop. That was the sign that the Shechina left. And once the last blast of the shofar, the long blast, the tkiyah gedolah, so to speak, stopped, that's when they were able to go back on the mountain. So this is what Hashem told him to do. So now it says, Vayedin Meshim in Ha'ar, El Ha'am, Meshim Rabbeinu went down from the mountain to the people. And as Rashi explains, and this is the definition of a leader, Meshim Rabbeinu went straight from the mountain to the people. He didn't go home. He didn't say hello to his family. He didn't do anything. This week, Meshim Rabbeinu was completely dedicated and devoted to the receiving of the Torah. There was no family, there was nothing but. And that's why the Pasuk is emphasizing, Vayedid Meshim in Ha'ar El Ha'am, he went straight from the mountain to the people. So the question is, obviously, what does this have to do with us? What's the Torah teaching us? The Torah is teaching us that there are times that a person has a mission to accomplish. Nothing can get in the way, not the family, not anything else, but the mission of God. In fact, we find that later in Chumash, in Parshas Kisisa, when the Jews sinned in the eagle, and Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, tell the Levim to go and kill each other. You know, even if it meant a half-brother, you know, the same mother but a different father, so they weren't from Levi and they sinned in the eagle. Hashem said, sometimes you have to be dedicated and devoted to the cause to such an extent, there is no family. And Moshe Rabbeinu, as the leader of the Jewish people, was the one that was actually living this as an example of living, that he went straight from the mountain, straight from Hashem to the people. He didn't do anything else. There was no other things except what Hashem told him to do. And he sanctified the people, like we said before, what he told them to do. And they washed their garments. And basically, they prepared themselves. They went to the mikveh. And the people sanctified themselves. And some of Hashem learned, Vayikadosh Yasa'am is actually that they went to the mikveh. Vayemer Olam, so Moshe Rabbeinu said to the people, Hayei Nochenim L'Shleishes Yamim, be ready at the end of the third day. Now here's a whole controversy in the Medrash and in the Gemara, exactly what happened. And we have to discuss this a little bit because this is the place for it. There's an argument in the Gemara between Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim, a famous argument. What day of Sivan did God give the Torah to the Jewish people? Rabbi Yossi says it was on the seventh day of Sivan. The Chachamim hold it was on the sixth. What's the argument? The argument basically is, did Moshe Rabbeinu add a day or didn't he add a day? In other words, as follows. Everybody agrees Torah was given on Shabbos. Everybody agrees Torah was given on Shabbos. The only argument is, was Torah Shabbos, is it on the sixth day or the seventh day? The Chachamim hold Monday was Rosh Chodesh. So if Monday was Rosh Chodesh, Shabbos is the sixth day. Rabbi Yossi says Rosh Chodesh was Sunday, and therefore Shabbos is the seventh day. But it's also dependent if Moshe Rabbeinu added a day of their on his own. Because Hashem said, I want you to prepare yourself for 3 days, because on the third day, I'm coming down. Now, if this started on the fourth, fifth, and sixth, so according to the Chachamim, when did Hashem come down? On the sixth. If Hashem says, separate fourth and fifth, because I'm coming down on the third day, so he's coming down on the sixth. Rabbi Yossi says, Moshe Rabbeinu added a day on his own. Moshe Rabbeinu added a day. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu add a day? Because he said, when God says 3 days, you need to be 3 complete days. But if I'm telling it to them in the morning of the fourth, so the fourth day is not a 24-hour day. Because it's only starting from the morning and the day ends at night. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, if God said you need 3 days, that means all 3 days have to be equal days of 24 hours. So you can't have, because you only have 2.5 days. So Moshe Rabbeinu added a day according to Rabbi Yossi. And the Gemara says, according to Rabbi Yossi, Moshe Rabbeinu did this on his own, and God agreed with it. How do we know God agreed with it? Because when did God come down? On the seventh.
Nobody made the calendar
they didn't have fax machines to email it out. I mean, they didn't have machines. They didn't have calendars here. They didn't have calendars. You could do whatever you want, but what's it going to help? It was impossible to know before the calendars. Because you didn't know when Bezdin made Rosh Chodesh. Could be this day, could be. It's a guessing game. What?
But we should only hold, like, for instance, if a baby's born, like, on Friday at 5 o'clock. So the bris could be next to following Friday at 7 in the morning, and that's not full 8 days. So we count that Friday as a day.
Correct. There is a rule in Halacha. Part of a day is like a full day. Okay. That's why a bar mitzvah kid becomes a bar mitzvah as soon as the 13th year is over, as soon as he enters into the next day. That's why, God forbid, somebody sits shiva, they get up in the morning. They don't have to sit the whole seventh day. But Moshe Rabbeinu says over here, when Hashem is saying the concept of 3 days, he means 3 full days. And 3 full days means 3 24-hour days. Each day has to be equal. And they're not equal in this case. So make sure, according to Rabbi Yossi, the halacha is like the Chachamim, that the Torah was given on the 6th day of Sivan, and Moshe Rabbeinu didn't add a day on his own. Even though, by the way, a lot of paskin that the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, the Torah was given on the 7th. But the Alter Rebbe paskins that the Torah was given on the 6th. And there's a whole sikh from the Rebbe about it. Yes, sir. Right.
That means the 3rd day from the night that starts from the time he's talking to
him. No. If in Pasuk, if you're looking in Pasuk 15, Tezvav,
yeah.
According to Rashi, the way Rashi explains the Pasuk, Lishlesh Yisyamim means after the end of 3 days. This is Rashi learning, this Pasuk is according to the way Rashi is learning it, is according to the opinion that Moshe Rabbeinu did add a day. If he added a day, it's at the end of 3 days, meaning on the 7th of Sivan. But everybody says Torah was given on Shabbat. That's a given. That they're not even arguing about. The whole argument was Rosh Chodesh Sunday or was it Rosh Chodesh Monday? Did Moshe Rabbeinu add a day or didn't he add a day? That's the whole argument over here. Now, it says, it was on the 3rd day. Early in the morning. Okay, and what? Yeah. No, but this mitzvah of the kiddush to meyem amocha v'chips of simleisam is by the original matan Torah, the 3rd day of the hagbala was the day of matan Torah. So it's 4th, 5th, and 6th. We start the 3 days early because of Kishlei Simei Agbalo, but the pearl then would be on the 4th day. Vayi b'yom ha'shlishi on the 3rd day of the Hagbala, right? That's what's on the 6th, not on the 7th. Okay, vayi b'yom ha'shlishi b'yos ha'beker, and here Rashi says Hashem made the Rebbe wait for the students. Normally students are supposed to wait for the Rebbe. Right? That means the Rebbe is supposed to come in last. But here, Rashi says, here the Rav was waiting for the Talmud. Hashem came first. In fact, as we all know, one of the reasons why we stay up Shavuos night is because when Hashem came early in the morning, this Pasuk, to give the Torah, all the Jews were sleeping. And he had to wake them up. That's why we stay up the night of Shavuos. So it says, as soon as the morning was coming, meaning right away, there was thunder, and noises and thunder, and a thick cloud, which symbolized the Shekhinah coming down on the mountain. And the voice of the Shefer, which was very, very strong. And the whole nation that was in the camp trembled. Everybody was trembling from all these noises and commotions and so on and so forth. Now, what shofar was this? Huh? No. Wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu blowing?
Abraham?
It was the, well, not the Sheif of Yitzchak. The Ram of Akedah Yitzchak.
Right.
Huh? Hashem. Doesn't say Moshe Rabbeinu was blowing. Yeah, Moshe spoke. He didn't blow shofar. When was the last time you can blow shofar and speak at the same time?
Blow and you speak.
That's no. Moshe didn't blow.
So the blowing was coming from up.
From above, sure.
Mm-hmm.
It was the left shofar of the ram. Mashiach is going to use the right shofar of the ram. That's what it says. That brings it down. The whole has been chassidus. Why this is the left one, the right one? Because by Mashiach it says it's going to be. You talk of a shofar gadol. Here was only the voice of the shofar. Doesn't say a big shofar. So big symbolizes right. Small symbolizes left. So this is only the left shofar of Yitzchok's ram. The big shofar, that's what Mashiach is going to blow. It's in the bank vault. Upstairs. Okay. Everybody was trembling in the camps. Okay, so Moshe Rabbeinu, as we're soon going to learn, he took him. Moshe Rabbeinu took out the whole camp to meet the Shechina. They stood underneath the mountain. Now, simply the meaning of this pasuk is they stood next to the mountain. Like in English, you have expressions, Los Angeles is on the ocean. It's not on the ocean, it's near the ocean. You have somebody has a house on the beach, or on the ocean. It doesn't mean on the ocean, it means near the ocean. So the simple meaning of the pasuk is they stood next to the mountain. Rashi also quotes the famous Gemara, and there's a lot to talk about this, that they were literally underneath the mountain. Hashem picked up the mountain over their head and said to the Jewish people, either accept the Torah, and if not, here's your mass grave. I will put the mountain and bury all of you. So, in fact, the Gemara says, and this I'm sure everybody knows, the Gemara says, from here is a good excuse for a Jew not to keep the Torah, because we were coerced and forced, and if you're forced to do something, you don't have to keep it. So the Gemara says, no, because in the days of Purim, we willingly re-accepted the Torah. So today there's no excuse anymore that we were coerced, because Purim time, every Jew accepted the Torah willingly. But Tesis asks a very interesting question in the Gemara. When the Gemara brings down this thing that they stood underneath the mountain, Hashem held the mountain over their head, Tesis asks the question, why did Hashem have to force him to receive the Torah? The Jews said, Nasa v'nishma. The Jews said, Nasa v'nishma, we accept the Torah blindly. So why did they have to do it? Why did Hashem have to hold the mountain over their head? They wanted it, they accepted it. So Tesis answers a very seemingly strange answer. Tesis says, well, they said Nasa v'nishma, but from all the commotion and the thunder and the lightning and the maybe they got scared and would change their mind. That's what Tesis answers. Maybe they would change their mind. So Hashem had to force him to accept the Torah. In Chassidus, there's a completely different explanation of this revelation of the mountain over their heads. And there's a few, before we get even to the Chassidus interpretation, basically what Hashem said to them is as follows. It's very interesting. It's not a Chassidic interpretation, but the Mefarshim says a very interesting, unique, basic thing. It's like the Marshall, a pilot can fly a plane. He could, take off and fly it. Once the pilot takes off, in the middle of the flight, he can say, I changed my mind. I'm not flying it anymore. Before you take off, you can say, listen, I don't want to fly the plane. Once you take off, you can't back off in the middle and say, okay, I changed my mind. Let the plane go by itself. What did Hashem tell the people by holding the mountain over their heads? Hashem said, listen, now you accepted it willingly. You want to fly the plane. You want to fly Yiddishkeit. Just remember, though, There's no turning back midway. So Hashem held the mountain over their head. Some of them analyze. It's very interesting. Hashem held the mountain over their head as if to say, listen, you accepted the Torah and Asa Nishma, fine, great. Just remember that now that you accepted it, tomorrow you can't change your mind. It's like a person who converts to Yiddishkeit can't a year later say, you know, I have to forget, I changed my mind, I'm going back to what I was. It's too late. Once you accept it, you accept it. Chassidus explains a whole different concept of standing underneath the mountain. Chassidus explains that the concept of standing underneath the mountain is not Hashem forcing them to do it. It is a revelation from above. It's a revelation from above that gave the Jews the ability to say Nasa v'nishma. There's two opinions, by the way, in the Medrash. When did the Jews say Nasa v'nishma? Before the mountain was put over the head? Or after the mountain was put over the head? Obviously, Taisus, who asks the question, if the Jews accepted Nasa v'nishma, why did Hashem hold the mountain over the head? So Taisus obviously learns that Nasa v'nishma came first. First the Jews said Nasa v'nishma. So yes, why did Hashem have to hold the mountain over the head? According to Chassidus, it implies that Nasa v'nishma was after the mountain was over the head. Because what gave the Jews the ability, the ability to come along with a concept of Nasa v'nishma that the Gemara says is an angelic, it's an angel concept, angels, like it says, Eisid Devarei Lishmeya Kol Devarei, that first they do and then they listen, that was the revelation from above, which basically was the concept of Har Sinai over the heads. So Chassidus explains, Har Sinai over the head was not a forced thing, like the Gemara says, in the simple meaning, over the heads, either or. Chassidus explains this was the revelation from above that allowed the Jews and gave the Jews the ability to say Nasa v'nishma. Another interpretation of the mountain over the head is a very simple concept, a chuppah. Matan Torah was the marriage between Hashem and the Jews. What was the chuppah? Har Sinai over the head was the chuppah. They needed a chuppah. Question, who was the officiating rabbi? But that's a different story. Because you can't officiate your own wedding.
So who do you say was the officiating rabbi?
I was going to nominate you, but you weren't there then.
But I don't have shmicha yet.
You don't have a beard. They wouldn't take a guy without a beard.
How about my certificate?
Maybe. Well, that's the whole concept of Matan Torah. Matan Torah is a marriage between Hashem and the Jews, and when a Jew does an Aveda, it's a concept of adultery.
When you go back to Chicago, Mech Hashem, I want you to know that your son is the funniest guy in town.
Thank you.
No.
Yeah, Shah, China. Shah. What?
The Nasa v'nishma, the first one was based on fear, because when you see something so wonderful, extravagant, there's no name for it, it's happening, incredible. So, you know, this is your creator, and for sure you're going to say Nasa v'nishma. And then the second idea is to just choose God again, which is what we compare to the first tshuva and the second tshuva. Sometimes you do tshuva because you're desperate, and sometimes you do tshuva because.
Yeah, but you're misinterpreting the whole concept of fear here. Fear is not fear of punishment. It's fear of awe. There's a difference between, there is in halacha, in Chassidus, when you speak about the concept of fearing God, reishis chochma yiras Hashem, to fear Hashem, there are many different levels of fear. In our own life, there's many different levels of fear. There is a fear of punishment. We're afraid to do something wrong because you're going to get punished. Then there's Yiras Haremimis, fear of awe. God is so great, I don't want to rebel against Him. I don't want to be disrespectful to Him. To give you simple examples, there's a mitzvah in the Torah, you have to honor your parents. There's a mitzvah in the Torah, you have to fear your parents. Now, an adult is not afraid that their parents are going to patch them, or is going to punish them. When you speak about a little kid, if they do something wrong, is afraid they're going to get a patch or time out or all these new mishigasim they came up with. In our times, it was a patch. It worked. Now they have time out and chill and time in and grounded. It doesn't work. It doesn't work, trust me. Now, a patch always works. Now, so the question is, what's the fear of an adult? The Moshe, there's a din. You're not allowed to sit in your parents' seat. That's called fear. Honoring them means feeding them, dressing them. Fear means you're not allowed to sit in their seat. An adult is not going to not sit in their parents' seat because they're going to get a patch. The fear means it's an awe and a respect. You're not talking about over here, maybe not touching the mountain, Hashem threatened them with a punishment. But we're not talking about that fear over here. We're talking about the awe of this powerful magnitude of the revelation of godliness that the Jews saw, that blew their mind, so to speak, in the awe of Hashem. It's not a fear that can coerce you into doing something. If you want to do it, it's because you want to do it out of the fear. It's not a fear of a punishment.
So there's no coercion from the beginning?
Well, in the simple meaning of the Gemara, yeah, Hashem held the mountain over their head and said, either accept it or else. Okay? But in Chassidus, in a deeper explanation of it, it doesn't mean that Hashem threatened them. It means Hashem revealed a revelation of godliness over their head, meaning an encompassing level of godliness, an infinite level of godliness that cannot permeate them and it has to be hovering above them because it's infinite. That level of godliness gave the Jews the ability to come along with this awesome statement of Nasa v'Nishma. That's what standing underneath the mountain is. And the emphasis of mountain, by the way, because, you know, everybody knows the famous Medrash that says, why did God pick Har Sinai? You know, there's so many bigger mountains, and all the mountains started fighting. Everybody knows this, all the kids know it. This mountain says, look how big and beautiful I am. And Mount Sinai was the smallest, Moch B'Kol Toraya, it was the smallest of all mountains. It never dreamt to be in the contest. And Hashem picked it because of its humility. To teach a Jew, you have to be humble. Right? So, Siddhis asked the question, so why didn't God give them Torah in a deep valley? If you're talking about lowness, even Har Sinai is a mountain. It might not be the biggest mountain, but if Hashem wants to teach us humility and bittul, why didn't He give it in a deep pit, in a deep valley? So Chassidus explains that the reason is because you need to be a mountain. A mountain symbolizes strength. You need to have strength and bittul at the same time, and humility coinciding, and one complements the other, by the way. Because humility means strength, and strength means humility. Real strength. Meaning, you'll find people normally who are very self-centered, people by nature care what people think about them. Normal people care what people think about them. That is me. How people are going to look at me and how people are going to think about me and what they're going to do. A person who's dedicated and devoted to a cause and all they care about is the cause, not themselves, they don't care what people are going to think about them if by them the ultimate goal is to get the cause. They don't care what people are going to think about them. That means they are so not self-centered. They are so nothing because they're only dedicated and devoted to the cause. All they think about is the cause, not themselves. That is the real strength of a person. Like Chassidus explains, when a person, God forbid, is drowning, okay, so in order to stay afloat, you have to tread water, right? So you have to make crazy motions in the water to try to stay up. Now, a normal person would never walk in the street doing this, making crazy motions. They'll think you're nuts, right? And therefore, nobody's going to walk in the street and make crazy motion because they don't want people to think they're nuts. They are nuts, but they don't want people to think they're nuts. So what happens? Yet, when somebody's drowning, God forbid, and they're making those motions to stay afloat, they're not going to think, 1 minute, I better not do it because the guy walking by the river is going to think I'm nuts. Why? Because when you're talking about your life, you don't care what people think. You don't care what people think. That's why the first halach in Shulchan Aruch is Ayevish Mipnei Amaligim, not to be embarrassed from all the scoffers of Yiddishkeit, the people that make fun of Yiddishkeit, because this is life. When you're doing life, you don't care what people think about you. Right? The Torah says, Matan Torah. Torah has to be given on a mountain. You need to have guts. You need to have strength. You need to have might. But at the same time, the might and the strength does not cause ego. It causes the smallest mountain. It causes humility. And that's why Hashem didn't give them Torah in a valley. Because Hashem said a valley is a deep pit. That's when a person thinks nothing of themselves. Below sea level of themselves. The Torah says, you have to know you're a mountain, you have power, and you have strength, and you have might. And at the same time, you need to have humility. So when the Jews are standing underneath the mountain, what does it mean? Hashem's giving the Jew the power to be a mountain, and to be able to say, Nasa v'nishma, we're going to do and understand it. First do and then understand. That is the true dedication and devotion of a Jew. And therefore, Chassidus explains, not that the Jews were afraid and they had to force him to do it. There had to be this revelation of strength, of mountain from above, to give the Jews the ability to be able to say, Nasa v'nishma, receive the Torah. That's why when the Jews said Nasa v'nishma, the Gemara says that a voice came out from heaven and said, Migila labane roze, who revealed to my children this secret? Shemalachei asharis mishtam shimbei, that the angels use. God said, God was like, who in the world revealed this secret to the Jews that only angels know about? To be Nasa v'nishma, do and then understand. Where did the Jews get that strength from? From God. But, like we learned, in order to receive that level, the Jews needed to prepare themselves for 3 days and 3 nights to be able to become vessels of sanctity, of Kedusha, to be able to receive that level of humility. So what did God basically tell the Jews to do? Get rid of your pleasures, not to be with the women. And secondly, don't occupy yourself in worldly things. Remove yourself from the world, become holy, and then you're a vessel to this revelation of Nasa v'nishma.
So God knows everything. He knew that we're going to accept the Torah and we're going to say Nasa v'nishma, right?
Yeah, but he wants us to do it.
Lolita, you see how much trouble you were even going way back then?
Shh.
We were told to avoid you.
Hey, Shah. V'har Sinai, Yud Ches, let's go. V'har Sinai, Oshen Kulei, Har Sinai was completely in and smoked up. Because God went on the mountain like a fire. V'yala Shonei Keshen, Akiv Shonei, the smoke ascended from Har Sinai like the smoke of a furnace. V'yachret Kol Ha'ermeid, and the whole mountain shuddered. I mean, even the mountain itself was shuddering at this great revelation of godliness. Okay, now obviously, I mean, Rashi also explains in the Medrash, it doesn't mean there was a fire burning, he called the fire department. We're talking about a revelation of godliness. In Chassidus, it explains that the word Oshan, that we're speaking about here, Har Sinai Oshan Kulei, was fully in smoked, whatever the correct English is, was smoking. What does it mean, Har Sinai Oshan Kulei? Har Sinai was smoking. The word Oshan, Ayin Shin Nun, stands for Olam Shana and Nefesh. Olam means world, Shana means year, time, and Nefesh means soul. Torah, the Pasuk is saying, Har Sinai, that symbolizes the receiving of, the giving of the Torah, the receiving of the Torah, it has to permeate the person's entirety. It has to permeate his Olam, his Shana, and his Nefesh. What is Olam, Shana, Nefesh in simple English? Time, place, and person. Olam refers to time, world. Shana, year, refers to time. Olam is place, Shana is time, and Nefesh is person. So Chassidus explains the Har Sinai Oshen Kulei, that the Har Sinai permeates the time and the place and the essence of the Jew. What does it mean? There are many people that say, here in this place I should be religious. Outside this place I don't have to be religious. Meaning, in Shul, give me an example, in Shul I have to act religious. Outside of Shul, it's not a holy place. Why do I have to act religious? Some people will say, certain times I have to be holy. Yom Kippur, Shabbos maybe, Rosh Hashanah. Then I have to be holy. Now, it's not the time of Rosh Hashanah. Yom Kippur, I have to be holy for. Or some people say, in Europe, you know, it was good to be religious. America is different, and in America you don't have to be religious. Like the previous Rebbe said, he came to America to show that America is not different. The Pasuk is saying, Varsine Oshen Kulei, that in time, and in place, and in person, Har Sinai, Torah has to permeate the entire entity of the person. Because, like we've discussed many times, MS, truth, is eternity. Sometimes true is not truth. The Alter Rebbe says, Va'ed argia loshin shaker, a temporary permanent is false. You can't have a temporary truth. A person who's religious at home and not in the street is not religious. If you're religious sometimes and sometimes not, then you're not religious. Religious is when you are always religious in any situation. You know, they ask a hypothetical question, so to speak. If you would be alone on an island, and it would be impossible for anybody to catch you. It would be impossible for anybody to see you. You know, sometimes you end up meeting people in the craziest of places. There's always in the back of your mind the fear, maybe somebody's going to see me. What happens if you know for sure it's impossible for anybody to see you? Will you be as religious as you are when everybody's around you? And if the answer is no, then you're not really religious. The true test of a religious Jew is when nobody's around. When people are around and you're religious, it doesn't mean you're really religious. It just you want to appear religious. That doesn't mean you're religious. You're doing it for somebody else. But if you want to do it real, that means when you're by yourself and nobody's around. Yeah. Yeah.
You keep going to shul, you'll eventually die. You become.
Because eventually something will rub off. Listen, by the way, that doesn't mean if you're not religious, you shouldn't be ever religious. I'm not saying it that way. I'm working the reverse. I'm not saying, okay, I say, okay, listen, they're not religious, so forget it. Religious. I shouldn't, I'll never be religious. No, we're not talking about that. If you fake it long enough.
Pretend it
Chassidus explains, if you convince yourself of an illness long enough, you'll become ill. If you fake long enough, Yiddishkeit, it'll become real. You know what they say? No, the Medrash gives an analogy of it. If you walk into a perfume store, even if you don't put any perfume on you, but if you hang around there long enough, you're still going to smell, even though you didn't put on any perfume. Just hanging around it will also impact the person.
Everything you convince yourself?
You can convince yourself most things. If you convince yourself long enough, it might work. At least you'll convince yourself that you're smart.
Did you hear that, Lolita?
I did.
Okay. Mipnei Varsina Ashen Kulai. Mipnei Asher Yodar Olav Hashem Ba'esh, because Hashem came down with fire. V'yala Ashen Ashani Kapshani Kipshon, went up like a furnace of smoke, which obviously, as the Mepharshim explained, again, it doesn't mean that it's a physical oven of cement that's going up. It's a spiritual concept of the fire of godliness permeating the person. Not only did the fire come down, but it elevated the person that the fire went up. It also went up. V'yecha kol ha'ma'ed, and the whole mountain was trembling. V'yehi kol ha'shefer, it was the voice of the shefer, helech v'chazek ma'ed, getting stronger. And Rashi says, normally when a person blows shefer, the longer you blow, the weaker it gets. By Hashem, it kept getting stronger. Helech v'chazek ma'ed, it kept getting stronger. Meshe yedaber, because Meshe Beinu was speaking, and Hashem was answering him with the voice. Meaning, as Rashi explains here, that Meshe Rabbeinu said basically eight of the Ten Commandments, because only the first two we heard from Hashem. The Jews said it's too much of a revelation of godliness. So they said, Dabar Atri Imanu V'Nishma. They said to Meshe Rabbeinu, you teach us. That's why what we say in davening, it's really the Gemara says in the Makkos, Teiro Tziva Lanu Meisha, Meroshe Kihilas Yaakov. Simply means the Teiro that Meisha Benu commanded us is an inheritance from the congregation of Yaakov. The Gemara says in Sukkah, in Makkos, the word Teiro equals 611. Tav Vav Reish Hei equals 611. So the Pasuk is saying, the Gemara says, Teira, 611 mitzvahs, tziva lanu Meisha. Meisha Rabbeinu commanded us. But the other two, Anechi and Layilacha, those we heard straight from God. And in Mirtz Hashem, when we get there, we will discuss why those two they had to hear from God, even though all the others they didn't have to hear straight from God, they could have heard from Meisha. But the first two, they had to hear from Hashem to make everything work. So it says that Meshe spoke and Elikim, Yanana Bakil. Okay.